Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight's terrifying story is about this private investigator in the state of Texas. Investigates this missing woman. But not only this mysterious woman, he links this to several murders of a serial killer. Now stick around because you're not going to want to miss this. Now let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe. Click on that bell and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. The guy buying a poinsettia had no clue I was watching him from my car. But that's no surprise. It doesn't matter if they are buying a poinsettia in November, Halloween candy in October, or stuff for a 4th of July cookout in June. I'm invisible and well paid for it. A good private investigator is like a stiletto. Discreet and unassuming, but lethal and relentless when the situation calls for it. And there's no telling which situations may call for it. It never fails that the worst cases always seem easy at first. That's just how it goes. Some cases are incredibly dull, while others haunt you for years. But there's no doubt that every case is unique. Since Halloween had just ended here in San Sebastian, that meant the stores were already pushing Christmas. Which was why I was being paid to watch someone buy a poinsettia instead of Halloween decorations. Or something related to the Day of the Dead. Although every day is Day of the Dead. November 1st just happened to be the day everyone acknowledges it. Because no matter what day it is, someone dies. Be it from natural causes or not. And lately, the ones not naturally related out here were getting a lot of attention. That was also why I was being paid to watch someone buy a poinsettia from a small greenhouse by the road. After a few minutes, the guy picked two poinsettias in pots wrapped in gold foil, walked to the checkout, and paid. Then he walked to his car and started on his way home, with me behind him every step of the way. Once he pulled into his apartment building garage, he was out of sight and my job was over for the night. Which meant it was now my turn to go home. When I was safely in my apartment with the door deadbolted, I whipped up some pasta with pesto sauce and tossed some garlic bread into the oven. When I carried the steaming plates into the sitting room, settled down in front of the TV, and ate with great gusto. After dinner, I headed towards the smallest bedroom which served as my office. On a yellow legal pad, there was a list of names written down. Aside from the last one, they had all been crossed off with a blue pen. Now it was time to mark off the name of the guy buying poinsettias. When his name had a slash of ink through it like all the others, I shuffled through some more papers and began to reread the notes on my most recent case. The one I had taken 4 days ago during my 5 p.m. appointment. The sky was iron gray that day, which meant the impending darkness was more pronounced than usual. I had just turned on my desk lamp and pulled out some forms in anticipation of the appointment when she knocked on my open office door. She was right on time. She was also gorgeous. Long, slender legs, soft olive skin, and long brown hair. Since she was dressed in a red t-shirt and faded black jeans, I could see that her left arm was covered in a tattoo sleeve. An explosion of colors, creatures, and designs that I couldn't begin to decipher. But the most striking feature by far was her eyes. They were emerald green and glimmering with intelligence. I could feel her assessing me as much as I was assessing her. "Hello, I'm Patrick Wilder." I stood up and walked around my desk to shake her hand. "Maddie Nielsen." Her grip was warm and soft. "Thank you for seeing me on short notice." "Sure thing. Please, have a seat." I gestured towards the faux leather armchairs situated in front of my desk, before I returned to my chair. "How could I help you, Miss Nielsen?" I asked after taking out a notepad and a pen.
"It's my sister. She's gone missing."
"I'm sorry to hear that. Can you tell me about her?"
"Gretchen was always the life of the party, the wild one. I will admit, she had got into plenty of messes growing up, and a few long after that. But she's a good person, caring."
"Where was Gretchen last seen?"
"She ate dinner at TGI Fridays on Tuesday of last week."
"With a friend?"
"Yes, Paula. An old friend from school. Then went to a movie with her mother immediately after. Gretchen left shortly after 8, and that was the last confirmed sighting of her."
"Was she a regular there?"
"Oh yes. My sister is a huge fan of the restaurant. She loves to go there and have margaritas with their appetizers. I personally could take it or leave it. Years back, when I was in college, I went through a phase where I would buy a lot of their frozen products at the store. The potato skins were my favorite."
"I know what you mean. When did you notice something happened to your sister?"
"The first sign there was any trouble was when she didn't show up for work. When no one could get a hold of her, we went to her apartment, and while it was empty, there was no sign of foul play either. We filed a missing persons report, but there isn't really much they could do since there is no evidence of violence and that anything is wrong. That's why I came to you."
"I understand. Believe me, it's how I get most of my clients."
"I'm sure. They were beyond useless. You would think that since people have been going missing and turning up dead here in South Texas lately, they might take it a little more seriously. But that would require critical thinking skills and common sense, which are practically extinct anymore."
I chuckled. "You are right on the money there. All right, Miss Nielsen. You know my retainer and fee. If you accept that, I'm at your service."
She clapped her hands together. "Thank you, Mr. Wilder."
"Feel free to call me Patrick."
"I will, especially if you call me Maddie." "There is one more thing."
She stared down at the floor of my office for a moment. When she looked back up, there was a glimmer of fear in her eyes.
"I think I'm being watched." "Scratch that. I know I'm being watched."
"Okay."
"You don't need me to explain?"
"I'm a retired law enforcement professional, and most of my work consists of being paid to watch people without them knowing it. The sensation is unique. If you feel like you're being watched, you're being watched. And I'm guessing you know it's not the police."
"Absolutely. I didn't ask them to begin with, but they would let me know they came and went. This is different. I could feel someone getting near my house. Not inside, but close to the windows. It's like a drink you are so familiar with that you could instantly detect even the slightest bit of difference in it. Like if it's made in a different state or something."
"I understand. Is there any consistency to it? Like, does it occur on a similar day or time?"
"No. Not that I've noticed."
"Is there a significant other in your life?"
"No, I'm single. Haven't had a boyfriend in a long time."
"Okay, my advice to you is simple. Be very careful. Keep your eyes open and stay mindful. And whatever you do, don't post anything on social media, especially if it has anything to do with your location or routine. No tweeting about your coffee run or checking into a restaurant with your friends."
"I understand. I've been staying away from that for a while now. Gretchen was always more into that stuff than I ever was."
"I don't mean to scare you,
but if something happened to her, that may have been how someone was able to abduct her.
Believe me, I'm well aware of that.
I have an important question for you. Feel free to take some time to think about it and get back to me if you need to. Can you think of anyone who may be responsible for Gretchen's disappearance?
No. No one comes to mind.
I've thought about that since she vanished, and I can't think of anyone.
All right. I made a note.
Did she have common sense or street smarts?
She was always more book smart while I inherited the street smarts. But she had a decent head on her shoulders. She wasn't an idiot.
Okay. Is there anyone who seemed really interested in the matter to you? Aside from people who should be interested. A neighbor or something like that.
She sat there for a moment.
Not that I could think of, but I have to admit, I wonder if she's the latest victim of the rattlesnake.
I won't lie to you, Maddie. You may be right.
What are your thoughts on the rattlesnake?
Someone with some brains, a basic working anatomical knowledge, and a career that gives them some kind of cover.
Maddie brushed a strand of hair away from her face.
I was just curious.
As you should be.
I read a lot of true crime books.
Do you?
Yes, it's technically part of my job, but I enjoy it nonetheless.
And what is your work?
Journalist.
I used to work for the San Sebastian Gazette before it went belly up, but I teach it at the local college. I've also written one book so far.
Really? What is it about?
That couple who went around killing people in Louisiana about 5 years ago?
That is interesting. I remember that. I'd love a signed copy if it's not too much trouble. She smiled.
No problem. Gretchen was always saying how I was interested in morbid things and it made me paranoid. Ironic, right?
Yeah, people used to be told all the time that they had seen too many movies.
There's a good reason people don't say that anymore.
I kept Maddie for a while longer while I made notes and she signed a contract. Her sister was now officially my next job. She thanked me again before leaving into the night. As darkness settled in, I began to dig into the files on Gretchen Nielsen. Gretchen was also an attractive woman, and shared some physical features with Maddie, like brown hair, but she was different than her sister. She was pretty, but conventionally so. Whereas Maddie crackled with energy and got your attention by sticking out. If I was a talent agent, I'd be tempted to say that she had it. It's no wonder Maddie was a journalist, as she was the kind of person you wanted to chat with. Even if it was about whether her sister was the latest victim of a serial killer stalking this part of Texas known as the Rattlesnake. So far, the official body count for the Rattlesnake was 10. 7 women and 3 men. But that was only the official body count, as there was no telling how many more murders may have been committed by the Rattlesnake, especially if they took place out of the state. The Rattlesnake's first victim was Veronica Sinclair, who was killed one night after leaving her job at a bar. Her body was found in a garbage-covered alley about 5 miles away from where she worked. Next was Lenore Torres, an accountant who was found dead in her duplex by her family. The next 4 victims were married couples, Charles and Beatrice Adams, and Lucille and Frank Stewart. Both couples were found dead in their homes by family members. The most recent victim was Tiffany Menendez, a college student who was found dead in some abandoned field. Tiffany, like all the other victims of the Rattlesnake, had been strangled to death before numerous post-mortem stab wounds were inflicted on her body. The police currently have no leads and no suspects.
but one witness claims they saw Veronica Sinclair with some guy wearing cowboy boots made from rattlesnake skin. A detail repeated by a neighbor of the Stewarts, who claimed that while getting ready for work, they saw a figure wearing similar boots leaving the Stewart house at approximately 5 in the morning. Someone jumped on the detail, and that's how the rattlesnake was born. As serial killers' nicknames go, it's a pretty good one. I'm not sure who first came up with the nickname, but it was picked up by the local media and it spread. Whether or not they caught the rattlesnake was up in the air, but there was no doubt that he would go on killing until he was either in jail, physically incapacitated, or dead. It boggles my mind to think of how many people behind bars have committed murders that no one knows about. A rattlesnake was a common sight here in San Sebastian, as most people encounter a rattlesnake by the time they're in grade school. I remember my first encounter with one when I was 10 years old. I was with my best friend Bill, and we were going outside to play after we had just finished watching Batman. On my way out, we heard a sound coming from the corner of the garage. When we saw it was a rattlesnake, we immediately ran screaming into the house. Because the noise we were making, Bill's dad sprinted downstairs like his hair was on fire and ran over to him, babbling incoherently while pointing at the garage. After he figured out what we were saying, he called a friend who came over and got the snake out. Bill and I watched the whole thing while we stood on the cement steps leading from the kitchen into the garage. So here I was, facing a rattlesnake yet again. The fact that I was currently handling a case involving a woman who may or may not have fallen victim to a serial killer in November was ironic. As it's been pointed out, that a lot of uncanny number of killers and murderers have November birthdays, with Manson and Bundy being two of the most famous ones. My friend Bill happened to be one of those people with a November birthday. But this state probably knows better than any other how November has an eerie connection with murderers, as one of the most famous murders of all time took place here on November 22nd of 1963. I don't know if anyone else does this, but I tend to associate different time periods with different places. For example, I associate the 50s with middle American suburbia, and 60s with California, and the 70s with big cities, New York in particular. In many ways, music of the latter half of the 20th century progresses almost like human development. The 50s and early 60s were times of innocent fun, but the music of the 1960s, much like the decade itself, underwent drastic change. Pop standards captured love and longing morphed into something raw and poetic that captured the tensions and strife of an era. Once the 60s ended, the 70s were a time when people came down from a high of the previous decade and wrestled with what came next. But the 70s also came with a rising interest in serial killers. Before then, the only serial killer probably really known was Jack the Ripper. But by the 1980s, everyone knew the names of people like Ted Bundy and John Wayne Gacy. Not only were people disturbed by what they did, they were terrified by the fact that they seemed so normal on the surface. Odds were good whoever was responsible for Gretchen's vanishing was a solid citizen as well. But there was no doubt that whoever was responsible for Gretchen's vanishing was someone known to her. It didn't have to be her best friend, just someone she was familiar with to some degree. Someone smart doesn't even consider going off with someone alone at night unless you know them, and Maddie confirmed Gretchen was pretty smart. I spent the next few days going through a list Maddie had made of people in Gretchen's life who may have had something to do with her going missing. Once I crossed off the last name, that of the guy buying poinsettias, I went through the rest of the information I had. There was always a possibility of an anonymous tip, It's happened before with some frequency, but no such luck so far. The reason why I'm not surprised by the number of anonymous tips I get is because people love to tell secrets, so long as the secrets belong to someone else. In many ways, someone spilling dirt to me is simply a different type of gossip. But unlike telling your neighbor, if people tell me something, they know it will stay with me. On top of that, most people would love to be able to give the one tip that catches a criminal or turns out to be right. Shows like Unsolved Mysteries and America's Most Wanted aren't just for entertainment. They're also made in the hopes that some viewer somewhere has seen it and recognizes something. I kept reading until it was late, and then I just went to bed. After breakfast the next morning, I went to that TGI Fridays Gretchen was last seen at. I wanted to get a feel for the area and what was around. Perhaps there were some choice spots where someone might hide and watch besides the abandoned strip mall. Aside from the fact the police had already searched the place, it was an obvious candidate to where a potential killer or kidnapper could hide and watch for any amount of time. City Council had been talking about redevelopment and all the usual slogans for the old strip mall for years now, but nothing ever happens. So it just sits there, silently overlooking the area from the hill it's perched on. I parked my car on the cracked blacktop that had once served as the strip mall parking lot. Years ago, this spot was packed with cars. Now the painted lines that marked the spaces had all faded away. The blacktop was full of potholes, and gnarled weeds were steadily popping up here and there. Facing me was window after window of blackout paper. These buildings used to be home to Cece's, Blockbuster, and a liquor store, amongst other things. Now they were home to wild animals, dust, and mold. I started at the end of the strip mall and carefully walked past each set of windows, keeping my eye out for anything that caught my attention. It wasn't long before I reached the final storefront, a former tuxedo rental store. On the bottom right-hand side of the windows, a faint corner of the window covered was crooked, and through the gap, I could faintly see the arm of a mannequin that was lying on the floor. Its pale gray arm was barely visible in the filthy storefront window. The carpet had been rolled up long ago, so the mannequin laid on the stained cement floor. But as I tilted my head, something gleamed in the afternoon sunlight. A bracelet. Mannequins don't wear bracelets, and mannequins left in long abandoned stores definitely didn't wear expensive charm bracelets. So I crunched down and got as close to the plexiglass window as I could and squinted, trying hard to see anything. But all I could see were some black high heels and some hair, dark brown, almost chocolate colored. The moment I realized that the hair was identical to Maddie's, my stomach lurched as I realized I had just located Gretchen. After I called the police and told them what I found, I did what was by far the worst part of my job and called Maddie. She managed to get there before the police did, and I spent the remaining time waiting, being used as a makeshift tissue by Maddie. I've been a shoulder to cry on for clients before, but Maddie's anguish was particularly painful to watch. And she wasn't just crying, she was bawling. Her entire body racked with sobs, and she was struggling to catch her breath. When the police arrived and needed to ask me some questions, I gently managed to extract myself from her and placed her in my car before I walked them through who I was and how I found the body. Then I sat down beside her in the driver's seat and waited. It gave me time to make a few notes. Gretchen had been placed there after the police had searched the place, meaning whoever was responsible was expecting that and was merely waiting for the right time to stash the body there. Why there wasn't difficult to figure out. It was an abandoned location no one would think to look after it had already been searched. But that also meant that they would have had to stash the bodies somewhere in the meantime. So that meant the killer had a place to keep Gretchen until they killed her, or had a place to keep the body until they dumped it there. I was leaning towards the latter, as holding someone hostage for a few days is incredibly difficult. By now, Maddie had calmed down a bit, and I could feel the fatigue beginning to hit her. She would probably doze off on the couch for a while tonight, but would find sleep evasive if she tried to go to bed normally. We sat there for what seemed like ages before she broke the silence.
"Is it bad I've thought about writing about my sister?"
"Not at all. Aside from the fact it's literally your job, it's your story. No one deserves to tell that more than you."
"I suppose."
I waited a moment. "Do you have someone to be with tonight?"
"What do you mean?"
"I'm asking if there's some friend or whatever who could come over tonight."
"I was going to go over to my parents. Is that okay?"
"That's great. I just didn't want you to be alone tonight. There are circumstances where I'd like to make sure a client isn't alone. That would be one of them." She sniffled.
"Thank you. That's greatly appreciated."
"And I'll be there at the service if you choose to have one."
"We will. Gretchen deserves it. She deserves a lot of things. Definitely far better than what she got."
"I'll do everything I can to find out what happened."
"I know you will."
The coroner eventually placed Gretchen's body in the standard black bag, and Maddie was escorted downtown to do what she needed to do. 3 days later, she dropped by my office with a copy of the coroner's report. In addition to listing her cause of death and cataloging her effects, the report left no doubt she was a victim of the rattlesnake, as the cause of death and post-mortem stabbings were identical to the other rattlesnake killings. Then Maddie told me the time and date of the funeral. I gave her a hug and told her I'd be there. And I was. Whenever a client experiences something like this, my presence is a non-negotiable. And not simply because there were good odds whoever was responsible might show up. When someone hires me, that means I'm there for them in their hour of need, whatever that may entail. They pay good money for the peace of mind my presence offers, and I make sure they get it when it's needed. The funeral home Maddie and her family chose was nice. One of those modern funeral homes that was far more user-friendly than what people grew up with. If you didn't know any better, you might mistake it for a banquet hall. As I anticipated, the media was lurking outside the entrance, trying to grab a quote from someone connected to the family or the investigation. They were kept at bay by cops who were there to keep an eye on things. I knew they were paying just as much attention to the visitors as I was. And there were a lot of them. A huge line that stretched through the building and out the door. To accommodate the crowd, a few appropriately dressed women in sensible shoes walked by periodically with trays of bottled water. Despite its length, the line was moved quickly and silently, which was no surprise to me. This wasn't a funeral for some beloved grandparent who died peacefully at a ripe old age, and the neighborhood came together to celebrate a long life that was well-lived. But no one could deny it was fitting that Gretchen met such a grisly end in San Sebastian, a town named after a martyr. I had never liked the word martyr. It sounded too much like murder, which I suppose is the point. It didn't take long for the empty strip mall to be turned into a makeshift shrine, with some candles and balloons all clustered in front of the storefront where Gretchen was found. And the site had been replicated all over town since they had found Gretchen's body. Too many people in this town have had their pictures surrounded by cheap flowers and large candles in colorful holders with icons on them. It was a pleasantly cool day.
but the funeral home soon became uncomfortably hot, which meant the scent of flowers became overwhelming. By the time I made it through the line and offered my condolences to Maddie's parents and gave Maddie herself a hug, it was well past noon, and I felt I was going to suffocate on the smell of overpriced roses. The service was mercifully quick, and I left along with everyone else who was not part of the immediate family. Once I was free from the scent of flowers, I drove to a pizza place and ordered myself the lunch buffet. Since my favorite thing to get there is the breadsticks, I got plenty of them along with a few slices of Supreme Pizza. Then I went back for a few slices of the dessert pizza, another favorite menu item of mine. But instead of leaving as soon as I was done eating, I sat and sipped my iced tea while I thought about the service I'd just left. I didn't know for sure whether or not whoever did that to Gretchen was there today, but I do know they would have a plausible reason to be there, and would almost certainly not overdo any emotion. That's the thing about most killers, especially serial killers. They have been known to put on a good act. But just like a rattlesnake, most serial killers can send out vibes that make someone back away. Taking down a serial killer is a major rite of passage for a detective. It's the equivalent of a musician playing Carnegie Hall. And just like getting to Carnegie Hall, you have to work, work, and work to take down a serial killer. Technically, I have already fulfilled my part of the contract and found Gretchen. But there was no way I was stopping now. I already knew the rattlesnake had some knowledge of the strip mall and was someone Gretchen was familiar with. But aside from that, there was still a lot I didn't know. Since I was going to my friend Bill's birthday tonight, it was a perfect chance to let my mind rest and see what else I could come up with. So I went home, caught an excellent nap on the couch, and woke up at about 4:30. It left plenty of time for me to take a shower and head to the restaurant, an Italian place at the center of town. At 5:45, I grabbed Bill's gift, a gift card for the movies, and headed downtown. I got there right on time, grabbed a spot in the middle of the parking lot, and headed inside where I was greeted with a blast of air conditioning. The smiling hostess dressed in black wasted no time in escorting me to Bill's table. I greeted the birthday boy with a big hug, gave him my gift, and sat down at the end of the table near his parents. Eventually, the other guests drifted in, and a comfort camaraderie began to settle over our table. The two waitresses assigned to our table began to take orders, and I went with the lasagna. While they moved on to my table mates, I wasted no time in digging into bread that was served with olive oil and seasoning. It was perfect. Crusty on the outside, super soft on the inside, and warm still from the oven. At some point in the evening, I turned and talked to Chris, a son of the guy who lived next door to Bill's parents. After some casual chit-chat, we started talking about work. He told me he worked as a contractor, and I told him what I did. "Were you the private investigator who found the body at the strip mall?" he asked after a sip of wine. Chris was tall, fair-skinned, and had fine blonde hair, the kind that shimmered in the restaurant's artificial light. "That was me." That had to be a shock. Mannequins don't wear expensive heels. Adrenaline exploded through my chest at that remark. How the hell did he know that Gretchen was wearing high heels? It was never made public in any fashion. There were only a few people who knew what Gretchen was wearing when she was found. Myself, the officials at the scene, Maddie, and the rattlesnake. "No, they sure don't." I smiled and nodded along, careful not to get a hint of what I was thinking. I spent the rest of the evening paying attention to Chris. While eating my lasagna, which was delicious, I learned that he had once done contracting work at the strip mall. I nodded along nonchalantly, but inside I was on pins and needles. When the meal was over, we all paid our bill and spilled out into the darkened parking lot. Chris was parked at the opposite end of the lot, so all I had to do was wait for him to pull out and stick behind me. He drove a bright blue Mazda Miata that glimmered in the beams of the various headlights. Once he eased out of the parking lot, I wasn't far behind, and we both cruised along at a leisurely pace. Chris got onto the highway and drove until he reached the east side of town. The roads out here were mostly dirt, gravel, and a touch of sand. As I took care to stay a good distance behind Chris, some dust occasionally kicked up behind my car, and the illumination from my taillights cast an ominous red glow to it. People can try to develop this land as much as they like, but still barely remove the days of the Wild West. In fact, it's still the Wild West. Except instead of outlaws riding horses and carrying Winchester rifles, they've upgraded to all-terrain trucks or SUVs and carry an AK-47 or an Uzi. I'm no stranger to this upgrade either, as my grandpa and great-grandpa shot at outlaws with a revolver, while I typically used a Glock. You hear people talking all the time about how they don't recognize something or someone anymore. But recognizing something isn't the problem. It's when you find that deep down, it's not what you thought it was that's really disorienting, if not downright terrifying. It's like a nightmare. Something looks familiar, sounds familiar, smells familiar, feels familiar. But it's not what you thought it was. It's like when someone goes through your stuff behind your back and tries to put it back the way it was, but you could sense that something small is off. Speaking of knowing something is off, Chris was now going on a long road towards a single residence, which meant I had to stop here, or risk being seen. So when I spotted a lone cul-de-sac of split-level houses, I pulled down the road and parked while he drove up the rocky driveway and parked in front of a ranch house, which I could see now had occupied a massive stretch of land that was otherwise untouched. I took a few photos of Chris exiting his car and going inside the house, as well as the house itself and the surrounding grounds. The land was wide open for almost a mile. It definitely made my job harder, as aside from some cover of darkness, I would be completely exposed if I approached the house. But since Chris was the only one in the driveway, that meant I could go in for a closer look if he left. Since the house was dark until Chris unlocked the door and turned on some lights, that meant the house was by all appearances empty, or he wanted it to look like it was empty. I sat there watching for about 20 minutes when all the lights inside were suddenly extinguished and Chris came back out, hopped in the car, and bounced back down the dusty driveway. Once he was past the road I was parked on, I grabbed the revolver I always kept in my car, quietly stepped outside, locked my car from the inside, and began the approach towards the ranch house. With each step, I took care to observe my surroundings and make sure no one was sneaking up on me. As I got closer, I could see the house dated back to the 80s and was painted beige, but the color had faded in the sunlight over time. No matter how quiet I was, my footsteps sounded painfully loud, but eventually I was within feet of the house and managed to circle it to get my bearings. The windows were all small, and the only thing visible in the darkness were the various blurs and shapes of furniture. The easiest room to see based on the moonlight was the TV room with a recliner facing away from the window. The back porch was outfitted with a deck that led to a sliding glass door, but that was covered with the curtain from the inside. I climbed the deck and tried to peer inside, but there was nothing I could see from out there. I was about to head back to the car when I smelled it. Something rancid and so overpowering it almost knocked me down and made my eyes water. Doing my best to breathe through my mouth, I looked left and right to try to figure out where the smell came from. But there was nothing around. As one of the wooden deck planks creaked, I looked down and a chill ran up my spine. Operating on instinct now, I took my phone out and turned the flashlight app to peer between the cracks of the sun-bleached deck. When I didn't see anything from the top, I went down to the deck steps and crouched down to peer through the latticework covering an opening. The beam from my phone illuminated two pallid human shapes laid underneath the middle of the deck, the limbs all splayed out in haphazard angles. The image was an eerie reminder of Gretchen, and my stomach gave an angry lurch as I looked at the source of the smell. From what I could tell, they were both female, and one had auburn hair, while the other was platinum blonde. Both bodies were laying on their back and were dressed in jeans. But before I could look any further, I heard a car pull back up the road. Ignoring the rising panic flooding my body, I quickly switched off my phone's flashlight, dashed to the other side of the deck for cover, and crouched down. When I heard the car door open and shoes crunching on the ground, I didn't dare make a sound. And when I heard the creak of the front door open, I took a silent breath and waited. And waited. After what seemed like the longest minute ever, the door closed. From this side of the house, a light flipped on before the shifting colors and patterns of a TV filled the window. By now, my legs began to ache, so I carefully walked away from where I was crouching and went back towards where I saw the bodies without taking my eyes off of the back porch, which was still dark. Once I was on the opposite side of the house, I checked my surroundings again and carefully began to walk back towards my car. My shirt was soaked in sweat, but I ignored it as I carefully took each step as silently as I could, as I ducked under the windows and listened for every hint of sound. It seemed like an eternity, but eventually I made it to the driveway. Using the car as a form of cover, I ducked behind it and waited. The minute I was sure the coast was clear, I carefully walked sideways back to my car. That way I never had my back to the front door and no one peering out the front would see me. As the ranch house receded into the background, I felt a small sense of relief. When there was plenty of distance between me and the house, I felt safe enough to walk forward on the sun-cracked earth. I was also thankful that the driveway was so long by this point you couldn't make out the features of anyone walking on it. But it felt like miles before I finally made it back to my car. The minute I was back inside it, I inhaled like I hadn't experienced fresh air in months and took huge gasps of air. I was covered in sweat and a bit of dust, but I ignored it as I dialed the police and told them who I was and what I had found. The cops wasted no time getting there, and Chris could not have been more surprised when he answered the door and found San Sebastian's finest waiting for him. It also didn't take them long to find what he had stashed under the deck, and while the forensic team came on site to extract the bodies and investigate the scene, Chris was escorted downtown. One detail that came out later that when he was ordered to step outside, he put on the closest pair of shoes there was, which happened to be a pair of rattlesnake cowboy boots. The forensic team did a first-rate job, and the evidence against Chris was massive. A respectable defense lawyer did his best job that could have been done, but no one was surprised when he was found guilty of all the murders committed by the rattlesnake, and the sentence handed down meant he would never set foot outside a cell again. I wasn't surprised when Maddie attended every day of the trial, or when her reporting got attention nationwide. She earned it. On the day the verdict was read, she sat next to me during the lull of the proceedings. "Do you like James Bond films?" she asked. "I do." "I won't ask you about your favorite Bond film or your favorite Bond actor, too easy. But what about your favorite Bond villain?" "Definitely far more interesting and more variety there. You first."
"Goldfinger."
"Good choice. Mine was Christopher Walken in A View to a Kill." Really?
Yeah, it's Christopher Walken. It needs no explanation. Plus when he says, more pua, all I could think about is the more cowbell sketch. She smiled.
Can't argue with that. And thank you for everything.
My pleasure.
Then she reached into her purse, pulled out a package wrapped in brown paper, and handed it to me.
This is for you. I promised it a while back.
I unwrapped to find a brand new copy of her book with the killer Louisiana couple. When I began to skim through it, I saw that she had signed it as well.
I'm planning the right one on the rattlesnake crimes. Offers are already pouring in.
I'm sure they are. You earned it, Maddie.
It will be dedicated to you and Gretchen.
I'm flattered. Any idea on the title?
Oh, yes. Rattlesnake Roundup.
I like it. Very catchy.
If you're free, I'd like to watch a Bond movie with you sometime.
Which one?
She laughed. I'll let you pick.